Welcome to Food for Thought, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories. Listen now as your host, Jolie Root, sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. And now, here's your host, Jolie Root.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Food for Thought. I've got a lot to share with you, so let's jump right into it. The American College of Cardiology reported to us this week that high doses of omega-3 fatty acids may protect against further damage in heart attack patients. This is pretty exciting, and this study was presented at the annual meeting of the American College of Cardiology, so that's a good group to hear this message. What they found was in patients that have had heart attacks, omega-3s protect against further damage, and they rounded up 374 heart attack survivors that received standard treatment, and they divided them into two groups, and the active treatment group got a 4,000 milligram prescription dose of omega-3 fatty acids every day, and the placebo group got a dummy pill that looked like the fish oil pills. And then they used MRIs, and they scanned the patient's hearts at 2 weeks, 4 weeks, and then again at 6 months after their heart attack. And they found that compared to the placebo group, the patients that took the omega-3 capsules had lower levels of inflammation and were 39% less likely to show deterioration of heart function. That's very protective, 39% less likely to have deterioration. There was also significantly less evidence of fibrosis. And patients who had a 5% increase in the amount of omega-3 fatty acids in their blood were most likely to benefit from the supplements. Now, 5% increase is a big increase when you take an omega-3 supplement. If we measure your omega-3 index, the general population is down between 0 and 4%. So patients that went 5% higher than where they were when they started were the ones that got the biggest benefit. So that's a big increase, but 4,000 milligrams of EPA DHA is also a big dose. So what they said was giving a high dose of fish oil soon after a heart attack improves cardiac structure and heart function above and beyond the standard of care. This group of patients had a remarkably high adherence to the treatments, so they felt very confident in the reality of the results. And the medication that they used is called Lovaza. Lovaza is an ethyl ester EPA-DHA combination. The 1,000 milligram pill actually has 840 milligrams of ethyl ester EPA-DHA. If you want the closest thing that you can get to that that is non-prescription, Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems is an ethyl ester 700 milligram combination of EPA-DHA. You would take five of those rather than taking four Lovaza. The good news is hundreds of dollars less each month for the over-the-counter version. Just make sure it's not a triglyceride form, but an ester form. Those are the prescription forms on fish oil. So that's very, very good news. Very good news. 39% less likely to have deterioration of heart function in the six-month period after a heart attack using high doses of omega-3. Awesome news. Now, another group of people need to pay more attention to omega-3, and that's women that are pregnant. There was a birth cohort involving over 2,000 women from Calgary and Edmonton, Canada, the Alberta Pregnancy Outcomes and Nutrition Group, University of Alberta, University of Calgary. They were looking at maternal nutrient status during pregnancy and also maternal mental health and child health and development. So they took a look at omega-3 consumption. The omega-3 long chain polyunsaturated fatty acids include EPA and DHA. And what they found was that the women were not meeting the recommendations that they needed. Now, the dietitians in Canada and the American Dietetic Association recommend that all healthy adults get at least 500 milligrams a day of omega-3 EPA DHA. The International Society for the Study of Fatty Acids and Lipids, ISFAL, specifically recommends that pregnant and breastfeeding women get a minimum of 200 milligrams of DHA daily. Now, the EPA and DHA are the active components that are in the fish oil supplements when you take a fish oil supplement. These are critically important during pregnancy because they are important for the fetal and placental development and the development of the infant, particularly for brain and vision development. What they found in this study was only 27% of women during pregnancy and only 25% at 3 months postpartum met the recommendation for DHA. So women who were eating foods were not meeting the recommendations for DHA. What they found was that women that took a supplement containing DHA were 11 times more likely to meet the recommendations. And so there is the takeaway. If you're planning a pregnancy, if you are pregnant or breastfeeding, it's very important for you to take at least 200 milligrams a day of supplemental DHA so that you be certain that you're supporting yourself, your well-being during the pregnancy, and also the well-being of your baby. Now, if you're pregnant with twins, you need double that amount because the DHA literally forms the brain in the baby. Your brain is primarily fat. Yes, we're fatheads, and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And DHA is critically important for signaling and mental balance, stable mood. Infants that are richly supplied with DHA sleep through the night sooner, so we can all get a big hurrah over that because we want that when we have new babies. So women were not meeting their needs for omega-3s. With all of the talk that we do about this, it's still the case that people are not really getting adequate omega-3 intake, so don't be one of those people. Also, don't be a person that's too low in vitamin D. You know, I always find a way to talk about omega-3 and vitamin D at every radio program. Vitamin D, and this is particularly important for men, this segment, vitamin D may keep low-grade prostate cancer from becoming aggressive. This was at a meeting of the American Chemical Society. If a tumor is present in a prostate biopsy, a pathologist grades its aggressiveness on a scale known as the Gleason grading system. Tumors that have Gleason scores of 7 and above are considered aggressive and likely to spread, and that requires surgical removal of the prostate gland or radiation therapy. In contrast, prostate tumors with Gleason scores of 6 and below are considered less aggressive. Seems a little scary, doesn't it, that 1 point makes the difference about whether or not you're going to lose your prostate or have to have radiation. But tumor scores with Gleason scores of 6 and below may cause no symptoms or health problems for the duration of the man's life. So with prostate cancer, we call that watchful waiting. We watch the Gleason grading system, and as long as the scores are low grade, urologists do nothing. They call it active surveillance or watchful waiting. Now, this is information coming from the Medical University of South Carolina. The cure for prostate cancer, meaning surgery or radiation, may be worse than the disease. So they wait a year and they do another biopsy to see where the patient stands when a man is diagnosed with low-grade prostate cancer. But knowing that you have low-grade prostate cancer can cause you understandable anxiety. So some men undergo an elective prostatectomy despite the risk of complications like infection or incontinence and erectile dysfunction. However, a man needs to wait 2 months from the time of his biopsy before he can undergo the prostatectomy so that the inflammation that's caused by the biopsy can calm down. So just even having a biopsy causes inflammation in the prostate. So researcher who's at the Medical University of South Carolina wondered if giving these men vitamin D supplements during that 60-day waiting period would affect their prostate cancer. Previous research has shown that when men with low-grade prostate cancer took vitamin D supplements for a year, 55% of them had Gleason scores that went down, or some of them even had complete disappearance of their tumors compared to their biopsies the year before. So they set up a randomized controlled clinical trial, and they got 37 men who were undergoing elective prostatectomies, and they divided them in two groups. One half of them got 4,000 units of vitamin D daily. The placebo group did not get any vitamin D, and they examined the prostate glands 60 days later once they had surgery. So everyone had their prostates removed. They were all opting for that. But they examined the glands after surgery. And what they found was that many of the men that received the vitamin D had improvements in their tumors, whereas the tumors in the placebo group either stayed the same or got worse. Also, the vitamin D caused dramatic changes in the expression levels of many cell lipids and proteins, particularly those that are involved in inflammation. So Dr. Hollis, who led this study, Bruce Hollis, who was at this center, explained that cancer is associated with inflammation, especially in the prostate gland, and vitamin D is really fighting the inflammation within the gland. So there was a protein, there's a growth differentiation factor 15 protein, GDF15, and what they found was that protein was strongly induced by vitamin D. And GDF dials down inflammation, and aggressive prostate cancers don't make that protein. So what they're suggesting is vitamin D supplementation may improve low-grade prostate cancers by reducing inflammation, possibly lessening the need for eventual surgery or radiation treatment. So the 4,000-unit dose administered in the study is well below the level that the body normally can make from daily sun exposure and is a completely safe dose. If you know someone with low-grade prostate cancer who is doing the watchful waiting, vitamin D every day, critically important for him. This is Food for Thought. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about cholesterol-lowering medications when we come back from the break, so stay with me.
It's hard to assure your kids are getting enough nutrients, especially those tricky omega-3s. Kids, in particular, need omega-3 oils in Carlson for Kids Cod Liver Oil because they are crucial for brain and vision development, as well as cardiovascular health. Higher levels of omega-3 fats from fish support better learning. Carlson for Kids Cod Liver Oil supplies 590 milligrams of omega-3 fatty acids in each serving. It has a delicious lemon flavor that kids love. It tastes great on its own or mixed in your child's favorite food or beverage. You can give your children Carlson for Kids Cod Liver Oil with confidence because all Carlson fish oils are tested for purity, potency, and freshness by an independent FDA-registered laboratory. Look for the purity guarantee right on the label. Be sure your children are getting the omega-3s they need with Carlson for Kids Cod Liver Oil. Look for it at your favorite natural food store today.
Why is vitamin D so important? Because it supports and promotes calcium absorption, healthy bones, healthy mood, cardiovascular health, and a healthy immune system. Are you getting enough vitamin D? It's important to us. Carlson features many products with vitamin D, including vitamin D soft gelatin capsules, liquid drops, and vitamin D in combination with fish oils. Carlson provides natural vitamin D3 to support healthy body levels of vitamin D. Ask for Carlson Vitamin D at finer health food stores today. Or go to carlsonlabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson is an easy way to get your vitamin D.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. You know, there's hardly a classification of medications more successful than the statin, cholesterol-lowering medications. And the war on cholesterol, which is arguably one of the biggest failures, I would say, in modern medicine, the failure being that lowering cholesterol has not lowered the incidence of heart disease, was set up for us by people that manipulate the numbers. So there was a new review that found that statistical deception was used in order to justify the use of statins in people who don't have heart disease. And in the biomedical literature, there are hundreds of adverse health effects with statin medications. If you have heart disease and you're a man, there is some justification for statins. But your mother, women in general, statins are probably really a bad idea. And how many of us have got relatives that have been recommended to take statins just in case, just to hedge your bets? In fact, recent cardiovascular guidelines have expanded the pool of potential statin medication candidates, so there are very few of us who are walking around with acceptable levels of LDL. We keep eking that number lower and lower, calling for more treatment with cholesterol-lowering medications. How did the drug companies get such a stranglehold? How have they convinced doctors that their patients needed these medications and needed them right now? Well, they're banking on the fact that you're not clear about the difference between a relative risk reduction, which can make an effect appear very powerful, and an absolute risk reduction, which reveals the insignificance of something. Because the reality is this, 100 people are treated with statin medications to offer one person benefit, and the change is from a 2% chance of a heart attack to a 1% chance of a heart attack. And statin companies call that a 50% reduction rather than a 1% improvement, which is what it actually is. So, you know, maybe if these medications were benign, this would be a better safe than sorry kind of story, but they're not. They can be very toxic. There are hundreds of adverse health effects evident in published literature with many modes of toxicity, including muscle damage, nerve damage, liver damage, hormone disruption, cancer promoting, diabetes promoting, which is the most recent and very troubling thing that has been reported, cardiovascular damaging, that's ironic, and even causing birth defects. You should never be on statins if you're pregnant. Beyond the clear known fact that statins deplete the body of two essential nutrients, coenzyme Q10 and selenium, they are muscle toxic and nerve toxic. And the heart is one of the most nerve-saturated muscles in the body, so the two modes of toxicity present a powerful threat of cardiotoxicity, which, as I said, it's highly ironic considering statins are promoted as having life-saving heart-protective properties. So in an expert review, the likelihood of many of us needing statins was decimated. The reviewer stated, overall, our goal in this review is to explain how the war on cholesterol has been fought by advocates that have used statistical deception to create the appearance that statins are wonder drugs, when the reality is that their trivial benefit is more than offset by their adverse effects. So remember that this goes back to cholesterol, and it's tempting to think about the number one killer of Americans, heart disease. It's tempting to demonize cholesterol. But cholesterol is a natural and vital part of our physiology. But it's more tempting to demonize cholesterol because that is what we've been so brainwashed about, rather than look at lifestyle factors, not to mention government subsidies of inflammatory foods. Not only is low cholesterol a problem when all you hear is that you can't be too low, how low can you go? There is no too low. Well, that's wrong. Low cholesterol is a problem. It puts an individual at risk for viral infection, cancer, and mental illness because of the vital role that lipids, cholesterol is a lipid, play in cell membrane integrity, hormone production, and immunity. So let's talk about the statistical manipulation. There was a Jupiter trial. They looked at Crestor versus placebo. In the Jupiter trial, Crestor actually increased fatal heart attacks in the treatment group that was obscured by combining fatal and non-fatal heart attacks. In the ASCOT trial, which was used to generate PR copy boasting Lipitor's 36% reduction of heart attack risk, they were using relative risk reduction. The real risk reduction was from 3% to 2%. That is a 1% benefit. And in the heart protection study, they had a 1 in 5 dropout rate prior to the beginning of the trial. That trial also demonstrated a 1% improvement with treatment, and people with significant side effects were functionally excluded from the study because they were the ones that dropped out. Well, no study has ever shown an association between the degree of cholesterol lowering and beneficial outcomes described in terms of absolute risk reduction, because the absolute risk reduction is 1%. And the adverse events are always presented in those terms to make them seem very minuscule. But the side effects of statins are real. Increased rates of cancer, cataracts, diabetes, cognitive impairment, and musculoskeletal disorders. In at least 4 trials, there have been statistically significant increases in cancer incidence. And the authors called those insignificant because they claimed that there was no known potential biological basis. Well, that's because they're thinking of cancer as some kind of genetic time bomb, instead of realizing that it has to do with mitochondrial dysfunction, loss of integrity in cell membranes, and environmental exposures. And again, the loss of integrity in cell membranes means the environmental exposures are more profound. With statistically significant increases in cancer incidence and deaths, in the statin trials, the minimal cardiovascular benefit is eclipsed by the cancer mortality. In one of the only long-term trials, there was a doubling of the incidence of ductal and lobular breast cancer in women taking statins for more than 10 years. Which kind of underscores my feeling, which is that women should never be treated with statins. Now, myopathy is the most well-known side effect of statins, muscle breakdown and associated pain. Even that has been obscured in the literature. There's a 40% likelihood of myopathy, up to 40% in the first months of treatment. The researchers only cataloged patients that had measurable levels of increase in a blood measure called creatine kinase at 10 times normal. But statin therapy, there was a study in the Journal of Pathology in 2006 that said that statin therapy induces ultra-structural damage in skeletal muscle in patients that don't have a tenfold increase of creatine kinase. They indicated that statin-associated muscle damage may be universal for the millions of people that are on statins. Then we also have central nervous system dysfunction. Low cholesterol is linked to suicide, depression, including postpartum depression, and cognitive dysfunction. 25% of the total amount of cholesterol that's found in the body is localized in the brain. Most of it is in the myelin sheath that coats and insulates the nerves. It's been estimated that 70% of the brain cholesterol is associated with myelin. And because half of the white matter is composed of myelin, it's not surprising that the brain is the most cholesterol-rich organ in the body. And the concentration of cholesterol in the brain, and particularly in myelin, is consistent with its essentiality related to membrane properties. The cell membrane is a few nanometers thick, and everything happens there. Information, nutrients, and cellular messengers are trafficked through protein gates that are supported by phospholipids and their polyunsaturated fatty acids. Cholesterol and saturated fat, two things you've been led to believe that are just terrible for us, bad at any level, provide essential rigidity and balance with other membrane components. Without them, the membrane becomes dysfunctional. And cholesterol supports the production of bile acids that are integral to the breakdown and absorption of consumed essential dietary fats. So behavioral and cognitive adverse events may be manifested because of interfering with membrane lipids with cholesterol-lowering medications. A low serum cholesterol level is a biological marker of major depression and suicidal behavior, whereas high cholesterol is protective. The incidence of suicidal ideation among adults with mood disorders was 2.5 times greater in adults taking statin medications. And several studies have shown that low cholesterol is associated with lower cognition and Alzheimer's disease, and that high cholesterol is protective. So we really have to take a look at some of the adverse psychiatric events: severe irritability, homicidal impulses, threats, road rage, depression and violence, paranoia, antisocial behavior, cognitive and memory impairments, sleep disturbance, and even sexual dysfunction have all been reported in registries of people taking statins. One pill for one ill, it's not as simple as that. If your doctor's recommending statins, I would get a more thorough cardiovascular exam. I wouldn't just jump on those without caution. We'll be back and talk about the benefits of meditation after these messages. This is Food for Thought. Stay with me.
Concerned about diabetes? Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes is a unique formula containing nutrients that support the health of individuals with diabetes or pre-diabetes. Two easy-to-swallow soft gels supply over 25 nutrients, including important omega-3s from fish oil. Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes supports a healthy heart, brain, and nerves, healthy vision, and healthy circulation. Ask for Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes at finer health food stores today, or go to carlsonlabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes. Ask for it today. Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. And most American diets are low in important omega-3 oils. Omega-3 oils are the vital components of fish that provide numerous health benefits. Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems supply concentrated amounts of these omega-3 oils that are needed to support vision, brain function, and a healthy heart. Each great-tasting Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gem Soft Gel contains 1,250 milligrams of fish oil from deep, cold-water fish. That supplies a full 800 milligrams of omega-3s, all in only one easy-to-swallow soft gel. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence, for they are tested for purity, potency, and freshness by an independent FDA-registered laboratory. Ask for Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems at your favorite natural food retailer today.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. Before we move into meditation, I want to sort of collect our thoughts around the benefit-risk decision of statins. There has been observed, in particularly in postmenopausal women, a dramatic increased risk of diabetes in patients that take statins, new-onset diabetes. So we really have to look at whether or not lowering cholesterol has been proven to benefit heart or blood vessel disease. And I don't think that it has. If you're a female and you know that you have blood vessel disease, so you've had a bypass, then I think that you work closely with your doctor, bring up concerns about statins, but correct what the statins do to you that is negative. The depletion of coenzyme Q10, very important. A patient on statins needs to take at least 100 milligrams a day of coenzyme Q10. Statins deplete CoQ10, and that weakens the heart muscle. So the heart failure is the long-term impact of that. And then pay very close attention to what makes the blood vessels get clogged in the first place. Inflammation and consumption of sugar and carbohydrates. The damage from the sugar is called glycation. Those two things, the inflammation and the glycation, really damage the blood vessels, so we need to work against those. The anti-inflammatories include the fish oils, EPA and DHA. And what is eminently much more harmful than elevated cholesterol is metabolic syndrome, elevated triglycerides, and elevated blood sugar levels. And that has more to do with consumption of carbohydrates, and particularly the refined carbohydrates, so sugar, white flour, white pasta, than it does consumption of fat. Fat benefits cholesterol. Things like grass-fed butter and some of the grass-fed beef and certainly the fish oils actually raise the HDL, lower the triglycerides, and make the LDL cholesterol more buoyant, more fluffy, and less likely to damage your blood vessels. So getting a more comprehensive cholesterol test that measures the particle size of the LDL and HDL to see where you stand with that. Do you have a lot of the very low density, the very small LDL, because that damages your blood vessels? Do you have high levels of inflammation, C-reactive protein and other measurable markers of inflammation? Because the fish oils help to bring that down. Vitamin D is an anti-inflammatory. And have you really gotten right with yourself about consumption of the refined carbohydrates, the white bread, the white pasta, and added sugars in your diet? The diet needs to be protein, about one-third of your plate, fruits and vegetables, the other two-thirds, and included in that would be legumes like beans, snack on things like walnuts, and cut out the basically the same thing as table sugar, refined carbohydrates that are the white breads, the white pastas, the candies, cookies, and cut out sugar-sweetened beverages, unsweetened iced tea, sparkling water, plain still water, water with lemon. Very, very careful about fruit juices. Eat whole fruit, not fruit juices. So those are some things to think about if you're a person that's on statins, male or female. Really modifying heart risk is something that we do with our plate. We do that with the meal choices. And then we go after those drivers of blood vessel disease, inflammation and glycation, rather than just looking at heart disease as a total cholesterol or LDL construct. We keep disproving that. So I hope that that is helpful if you are on statins. We're certainly not saying everybody get off your statins. We're saying have a more comprehensive conversation with your physician. If you don't have heart disease or blood vessel disease, then I personally don't think that you are a candidate for statins. But if you've had a bypass, then you've got to have a very comprehensive conversation with your doctor. Now, if you feel stressful about all of this, meditation may be the answer, and I'm a person that meditates. And so I'd love it if people who listen to me also were people who meditate, because there are so many benefits. Researchers have been studying the effects of meditation on the brain. Just think about the brain. And they've come to some very important conclusions that offer further motivation, hopefully, and maybe inspire you to be a practitioner, a consistent practitioner of meditation. There have been over many years published research demonstrating the practice of regular meditation increasing brain density, boosting connections between neurons, decreasing symptoms of depression and anxiety, which is why I asked if the statin conversation made you feel stressful, because meditation is a very good anti-anxiety. Meditation also provides clarity of thought. It increases positive mood and endorphin levels. There have been studies that have shown that meditation improves physical functioning. It decreases chronic disease risks. It enhances overall clarity of thinking and quality of life. And it supports mental, emotional, and physical health in a number of tangible ways. But there have been some new brain benefits that have been revealed for meditation. Neuroscientists at UCLA have shown a fascinating neural effect of regular meditation, the ability to increase cortical gyrification of the brain. Cortical gyrification refers to the folding of the cerebral cortex. This is a function that allows the brain to process information faster. The cerebral cortex is the outermost layer of neural tissue in the brain, and it plays a very important role in controlling memory, consciousness, our thought processing, decision making, attention, and awareness. During cortical gyrification, the tissues of the cerebral cortex fold, and it creates indented fissures and creases called sulci and gyri. And the sulci and the gyri increase neural processing and neurotransmitter communication. So increased gyrification enhances the brain's capacity for computing information, for maintaining focus and attention, for creating and retrieving memories, and processing logic and making decisions. When the researchers compared the brains of meditators to those who never meditated, they found significant increases in cortical folding across a wide area of the brain responsible for numerous functions beyond rapid information processing and retrieval. They found improvement in emotional and mental health capacities, emotional control, heightened awareness, introspection. And that's directly in line with some of the more noticeable results of regular meditation, which include increased compassion for ourselves and also for others, enhanced self-awareness and introspection, and greater emotional stability. Researchers also found significant increases in cortical gyrification among the more experienced practitioners. In other words, the longer a person had been practicing meditation, the greater the beneficial changes in their brain. I've always believed strongly in the mental and emotional benefits of regular mindful meditation, and the physical payoffs are equally impressive. We all know that reducing stress can dramatically improve health on a number of levels. The beneficial effects of regular mindful meditation are shown to protect against and reverse DNA damage. And what we're talking about there are the telomeres, those little caps at the end of DNA. P.S., fish oil lengthens the telomeres. Fish oil, along with meditation, is particularly good to protect the DNA everywhere in the body. Meditation boosts immune function. It reduces our cardiovascular disease risk factors. It decreases inflammation. It improves outcomes in cancer. It reduces side effects of conventional treatments and increases vital energy and physical capacity. So I think that as the practice of meditation becomes better understood and hopefully more widely practiced, more and more healthcare professionals will be recommending the discipline of medication to their patients. That just makes them better healers. And also regular meditation gives us all, I think, a higher level of compassion. And so the more regular you are, the UCLA study found, the more regular you are with your meditation practice, the more effective it is. And even 10 minutes a day can offer significant and noticeable benefits in a short amount of time. So what we're looking at is accessing our natural state of tranquility and clarity. If you've never done it before, meditating involves, there's really not anything more necessary than sitting quietly, focusing on your breath, and letting go of other thoughts. Your attention is constantly being trained on the process of breathing. So you find a quiet, comfortable place to sit. You don't even have to close your eyes. I find for a lot of people that are just getting started that it helps to focus on something that's in front of you, like a rock, a little rock, or put that on the ground in front of you or on the floor in front of you. Focus your eyes and your breathing on that rock. And when thoughts arise, and they will, we all have very busy minds, just acknowledge them and let them slip away with every exhale. When your mind wanders off, bring your attention back to your breathing and the rock. Doesn't need to be a rock, by the way. It could be a candle. A lot of people like to light a candle and watch the flame when they're meditating. And you visualize each inhalation and each exhalation going back to the candle flame or the rock. And in this way, you just become very quiet. And there's no right or wrong way to do this, but I promise you that you will begin to experience a very profound level of quiet and calm and peacefulness. I was really happy to find that my nieces and nephews in preschool were learning meditation techniques to get themselves under control when they get agitated. Meditation, improving your brain and improving your life. This is Food for Thought. We'll be right back after these messages.
No doubt you've heard a lot about the health benefits of vitamin D. Now you can get your vitamin D in a base of the healthiest omega-3s. Carlson Solar D Gems provides both. Carlson Solar D Gems provides 2,000 to 4,000 IU of all-natural vitamin D3, a vitamin that many people do not get enough of from the sun alone. In fact, many health experts are now claiming that most Americans are lacking in this important nutrient. Vitamin D3 plays an important role in bone, cardiovascular, and immune health. Plus, Carlson Solar D Gems also contains the important omega-3 oils that your body needs to support vision, brain function, and a healthy heart. The omega-3s support the absorption of the vitamin D. You get the benefits of both. Carlson Solar D Gems, vitamin D in a base of omega-3s. Look for Carlson Solar D Gems at your favorite natural food store today.
Have you heard about Carlson Super 2 Daily?
No doubt you've heard about the benefits of eating more fish, but most of us don't eat omega-3 rich fish every day. Carlson Super 2 Daily is like having a serving of light tuna when you take your multivitamin. Take your vitamins, minerals, and a dose of Heart Smart omega-3s all in one formula, two soft gels. Carlson Super 2 Daily. It's the perfect foundation for your supplement program. Carlson Super 2 Daily is a comprehensive, balanced formula supplying essential vitamins and minerals in just two easy-to-swallow soft gels. Plus, Carlson Super 2 Daily provides the omega-3s, EPA, and DHA to support the heart, nerves, brain, and the eyes. Purity, potency, and freshness are always guaranteed. Look for Carlson Super 2 Daily at finer health food stores today.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. I'm your host, Jolie Root. I'm a nutritionist. I'm also a nurse. I have a blog, Red Wine, Green Tea, and Dark Chocolate. And on the blog, right there on the front page, when that page first loads, over on the right-hand side are links to the radio shows and also a link to the podcasts. So if you ever want to hear the show again or go back to a particular segment, if you go to my blog and click on that link, it will take you over to my podcast site, and I put most of the shows up on the podcast site. So you can listen to them right there on your computer, or you can actually download it and listen to it on your iPod or your MP3 player. But if there's a segment that I do that you think, what did she say about that? I want to hear that again. I do podcast most of these shows. So you can go to my blog, and it's joliblogs.com, joliblogs.com. And that's how you can go to the link for the podcast to listen again if you are so moved. Last week I talked about diet soda increasing belly fat, which is a big upset for a lot of people because they drink diet soda to not be taking in the sugar that increases our belly fat. So the idea that the diet soda is as bad or worse is pretty disappointing. Well, what if you've got some? Most of us have got a little extra around the middle that we wish we didn't have. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about some proven ways to reduce belly fat. And, you know, overweight isn't necessarily unhealthy. There's lots of overweight people that are in excellent health, and there's a lot of normal weight people that have metabolic problems associated with obesity. That's because in most places in the body, a little bit of fat under the skin is actually not that big a problem. It's maybe a cosmetic problem, but it's the fat in the belly that causes the biggest issues. If you have a lot of excess weight around your waistline, even if you're not very heavy, you should take steps to get rid of that belly fat. And it's usually estimated by measuring the circumference around your waist. Anything above 40 inches in men or 35 inches in women is considered abdominal obesity. So there are some proven strategies that can help us target the fat in the belly area more than the other areas of the body. Here they come. Number one, don't eat sugar. And avoid sugar-sweetened beverages like the plague that they are. Added sugar is extremely unhealthy. It has uniquely harmful effects on metabolic health. Sugar is half glucose, half fructose, and fructose can only be metabolized by the liver in very small amounts. And when you eat refined sugar, the liver gets flooded with fructose, and it forces the liver to turn it all into fat. So excess sugar, mostly due to the large amounts of fructose, lead to increased accumulation of fat in the belly. And I happen to think that this is the primary mechanism behind sugar's harmful effects on health. Increased belly fat and increased fat in the liver, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. That all adds up to insulin resistance and a host of metabolic problems. Liquid sugar is the worst case scenario. They don't get registered, the calories in liquid sweet drinks. They don't get registered by the brain in the same way as solid calories. So when you drink sugar-sweetened beverages, you take in more total calories. Sugar-sweetened beverages, each daily serving is linked to a 60% increased risk of obesity in children. Each daily serving. So completely eliminate sugary drinks and minimize added sugar in your diet. So this means soft drinks, sport drinks, fruit juices, and sweetened coffee and tea. Keep in mind that none of this applies to whole fruit. That's extremely healthy. It has plenty of fiber, and that mitigates the negative effects of the fructose. The amount of fructose you get from fruit is negligible compared to what you get from a diet high in refined sugar. You got to read labels to make sure that your foods don't contain huge amounts of sugar. Even foods marketed as health foods can. The number two point about belly fat is eat more protein. That might be the best long-term strategy. Protein is the most important macronutrient when it comes to losing weight. Protein reduces cravings in one study up to 60%, boosts metabolism. In women, protein helped women eat up to 441 fewer calories per day. If weight loss is your goal, adding protein to your diet is probably the single most effective change that you can do. How much? It needs to be 30% of your calorie intake. So that brings up something. You might want to measure your calories. There are all kinds of online and you can, for your iPhone or Android, smartphone apps to help you actually measure your calories, and doing that for a while can be a real eye-opener. But there's evidence that protein is particularly effective against belly fat, and the amount and quality of protein was inversely related to fat in the belly. People that ate more and better protein had much less belly fat. What was the best protein? Animal protein. Animal protein consumption was linked to significantly reduced risk of belly fat gain over a period of 5 years in one study. Refined carbs and vegetable oils were linked to an increased level of belly fat, but fruits and vegetables were linked to reduced amounts. Protein needs to be 30% of your calories. So, increase your intake of eggs, fish, seafood, meat, poultry, and dairy products. These are the best protein sources in the diet. If you're a vegetarian, then the beans and the plant proteins are something that you can use. A bonus tip, consider cooking your foods in coconut oil. Some studies have shown that 2 tablespoons of coconut oil reduces belly fat, but protein. Now, at the same time that you're boosting your protein, the other thing you need to do is cut carbs. Carb restriction is a very effective way to lose fat. And when people cut their carbs, their appetite goes down and they lose weight. 20 randomized control trials have shown that low-carb diets lead to 2 to 3 times more weight loss than low-fat diets. This is true even when the low-carb groups were allowed to eat as much as they want while the low-fat groups were calorie-restricted and hungry. Low-carb diets lead to quick reductions in water weight, so you see a difference on the scale in just a few days. But low-carb diets specifically target the fat in the belly, around the organs, and in the liver. And what that means is a particularly high proportion of the fat that's lost on a low-carb diet is the dangerous and disease-promoting abdominal fat, the belly fat. So avoiding refined carbs, the white breads, white pasta, sugar in cookies, candies, cakes, crackers, should be sufficient, especially if you keep your protein high. Now, if you really want to get right with this as far as the carbs are concerned, if you keep your carbs down to 50 grams a day or less, that will put your body into ketosis, which kills your appetite and makes your body start burning primarily fats for fuels. In type 2 diabetics, the low-carb diet can be a lifesaver. But low-carb, higher protein is very effective for burning away that belly fat. Now, another point to consider is eating foods that are rich in fiber, and particularly the soluble fibers, the viscous fibers. Dietary fiber is mostly indigestible plant matter. And eating plenty of fiber can help with weight loss, but not all fiber is created equal. We want the soluble fiber, the viscous fibers. They bind water and form kind of a thick gel that sits in the gut, sits in the intestines. And that gel slows the movement of food through your stomach and small bowel, and it slows down the digestion and absorption of nutrients. The end result is a prolonged feeling of fullness and a reduced appetite. One review study found that adding 14 grams of fiber daily to your regular intake was linked to a 10% decrease in calorie intake and a weight loss of 5 pounds over 4 months, doing nothing else different. So soluble fiber, you can take a supplement. Glucomannan is an example of that. Oatmeal, oats, legumes, vegetables, fruits, those are all very, very good sources of soluble fiber. So, we're cutting out the added sugar, we're cutting out the sweetened beverages, we're boosting protein, we're reducing carbs, and we're increasing fiber. And then, we've got to talk about aerobic exercise. Exercise is important, but it's one of the best things you can do if you want to live a long and healthy life. And it's particularly effective at reducing belly fat. Now, I'm not talking about sit-ups. Spot reduction doesn't really work. You could do an endless number of crunches. Yeah, your muscles will get better, but you won't have a change in waist circumference. But aerobic exercise like walking, running, swimming has been shown to cause major reductions in belly fat in numerous studies. And walking helped people not regain lost fat after weight loss. It reduces inflammation, it straightens out your blood sugar levels. All points to consider if you've got a belly that's just a little too big. That's it for me. I'm out of time. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back again next week. Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to Food for Thought with Jolie Root, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories. Tune in again next time as Jolie Root sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. Food for Thought, Fridays at 10 a.m. on 1160 WVNJ.